We're still back in Genesis and talking about people in the Old Testament, essential Old Testament. We'll be doing this for a while, and today we're still on Joseph. And just kind of as a little reminder about where we were, last week we had Jacob has all of his sons. He has 12 sons. One of them is a special guy that he picked out that really, I don't know, you know, he was doing the right thing, but that was the 11th son was the special one, and he made him the coat of many colors. The other brothers got jealous. They didn't like it. Joseph had some dreams that kind of indicated that everybody else was going to bow down to him, and that was bothering him. And then so Joseph went to check on the brothers who were tending sheep, and they grabbed him, threw him in a pit, and sold him as a slave. And then he was taken by the Midianites, who were the people he sold him to, down to Egypt. So he's in Egypt now, and he's been sold as a slave. So that's where we are on the story, and we're going to pick it up there. And Genesis 39, now Joseph had been brought down to Egypt, and Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh, the captain of the guard, an Egyptian, had bought him from the Ishmaelites who had brought him down there. And the Lord was with Joseph, and he became a successful man, and he was in the house of his Egyptian master. Now, a couple things we know about this. Number one, obviously, Joseph is sold as a slave. Number two, the person who bought him is this captain of the guard, an Egyptian. And so this is probably, based on things other people have speculated on, let's put it that way, he seems to be maybe like the Pharaoh's, a captain among the Pharaoh's bodyguard, the guard of the palace, the people who, so he's a high up official, and he's right there, and he's a captain of this, and he's obviously wealthy enough to own a slave, so he bought Joseph, and he's very successful, you know, that's what it says. So he made him the Lord was with Joseph, and he became a successful man. So Joseph, when he was sold, he was about 17. And as he gets here to this place, he's a slave, his brothers. It seems to me like this would be obviously a place where you get very bitter. Like, okay, God, and you could also doubt God. Look, God, I had these dreams that I was going to be the over, you know, the all their sheaves were going to bow down to my sheaf. All their stars were going to bow down to me. What is this? What's going on here? But he gets there, and he's a slave, and he's got a bad situation, you know, he's the situation, so he just starts working. And I think one huge lesson for all of us is, whenever you're in a position that doesn't seem like it's fair, like it's just, like it just doesn't seem right, you know what? Realize God's bigger than your position, and he's put something in front of you. Do that. Do that. Work on that. Give, you know, the Bible says in another place, whatever you do, do it with all your might. And just do it. And God was with him. And he became successful. And he was in the house of the Egyptian master. And his master saw that the Lord was with him. And that the Lord caused all that he did to succeed in his hands. It's like, man, this guy is good. I'm guessing you start out as a 17-year-old slave, but you're working. Everything he does is like, man, that's good. That's really good. So Joseph found favor in his sight and attended him, and he made him overseer of his house and put him in charge of all that he had. So he's got, apparently there's a staff, he's got the house, he's got the captain Potiphar is just like, man, this guy's good. And so pretty soon he's given more and more responsibility to Joseph. And then pretty soon he had him in charge of all that he had. And from the time that he made him overseer in the house and over all that he had, the Lord blessed the Egyptian's house for Joseph's sake. And the blessing of the Lord was on all that he had in house and field. And so the blessing was secondary. Not only did he bless Joseph, but he blessed the people that blessed Joseph. And so as he's doing this, Joseph's overseeing. He's got evidently some farmland. He's got a field. He's got his house. He's got his household. He's a successful rich man. Joseph's now overseeing everything. And wow, this is going great. So he left all that he had in Joseph's charge, and because of him, he had no concern about anything but the food he ate. So he's just like Joseph, he just kind of tossed him the keys. He's the captain of the guard. He's got his work to take care of. He's got but he comes home and he's got this big household. He just like, hey, what's for dinner? That's his big question. What are we eating? And everything's looking really good. Now, it says that Joseph was handsome in form and appearance. So by this point, Joseph's somewhere in his 20s, we're assuming. I doubt if he's still 17 years old. He's had time for stuff to happen, him to see how successful he's put him in charge of things. So here's this guy in his 20s. And now Joseph was handsome in form and appearance. And after a time, his master's wife cast her eyes on Joseph and said, lie with me. And he's like, and so all of a sudden, yeah, but he refused and said to his master's wife, behold, because of me, my master has no concern about anything in his house, and he's put everything that he has in my charge. He is not greater in this house than I am, nor has he kept back anything from me except you, because you're his wife. How can I do this great wickedness and sin against God? So Joseph starts like reasoning, like she's like, lie with me. And he's like, no, leave me alone, okay? He's like, look, the master's given me complete trust. He's put me in charge of everything. He's not held back one thing except you. And so, no. And he says, and then he kind of taps it off with, how can I do this great wickedness and sin against God? And see, the whole issue wasn't that, is he going to, I mean, he could have said sin against the master, sin against her, sin against a bunch of stuff. But really, he knows, look, the reason he's being blessed is God. The reason God's blessing his master is because God's blessing him through his master. And now she's throwing herself at him, and he's like, no, we're not going to do that. We're not going to sin against God. And as she spoke to Joseph that day, and as she spoke to Joseph day after day, he would not listen to her to lie beside her or to be with her. And she's not taking no for an answer. So every day he's coming into work and she's following him around like, hey, Joseph. And he's kind of like, you know, please leave me alone, okay? But one day, when he went to work, went into the house to do his work, and none of the men of the house was there in the house, she caught him by his garment, saying, lie with me. So he comes in, and for whatever reason, apparently none of the other workers were there. Maybe she sent them out planning this, He comes in, hey, where's everybody at? And she's alone. She grabs his jacket, basically, his garment, and she says, lie with me. And she's been going after him for day after day, it says, right? But he left his garment in her hand and fled and got out of the house. Okay, so basically she grabs him. Oh, I know what I did here. So she comes up. Let's see. So she's got Joseph and she's saying, lie with me, right? And I was kind of thinking about this, of Joseph, his whole background, what it was. And if you kind of think about this, this wasn't something that this whole sexual thing wasn't something that his family was like super fastidious about. I mean, Abraham couldn't have, when Sarah couldn't have a child, then he takes Sarah's handmaiden, has a baby, ends up causing problems. Isaac, Rebecca, doesn't seem like much is mentioned about that. But Jacob, his dad, has four wives. He really only wanted one, ends up with four wives, and he's got all these kids by different women, and it's kind of causing a problem. And one of his oldest brother, Reuben, back in chapter 35, it was mentioned that while Israel lived in the land, Reuben went and lay with Bilhah, his father's concubine. Bilhah was Rachel's handmaiden that had Dan and Naphtali, two of Joseph's brothers. So the older brother, he had relations with the stepmother, I guess you'd call it. And then then we get the whole case in the chapter right before this. We skipped over a chapter because at the end of chapter 37, Joseph is sold by his brothers. Remember, Reuben, who had had this relationship with his stepmother, he said, look, let's not kill the boy. And they threw him in the pit. He was planning on coming to get him later. Judah was like, oh, wait, here's some slave traders. Why don't we sell him? So then in the next chapter, which we skipped over, there's a story about Judah. And as just to kind of show there's a little lack of fastidiousness in the family about the whole sexual relation type thing, that's a crazy story. We've got to just tell the story real quick with a little, okay, here's the brothers, right? And so then we've got Judah, and Judah gets married. Okay, Judah gets married, and then they have three sons. Kind of just move up to just talk about this family for a minute. So Judah is married. She has three sons. The names are Onan, and Shelah. So they, marries Tamar. Okay, Tamar and are married. Then is the bad guy. God says, you're not going to keep living. So he dies. Okay. So Tamar, then based on the rules of their society, Tamar then becomes wife of the next brother, Onan. You remember that story at that time, Jesus, they asked him, well, what if one brother dies and then he's got seven brothers and so the wife goes to this one and then he dies and goes down the line? That's kind of the custom they followed, okay? So Tamar and Onan are married, but his marriage isn't really a true marriage. His role is to raise up children that aren't going to be his children, but they're going to be his brother's children, the one that died. Well, he doesn't want to do that. So he practices some sort of birth control from the time. God punishes him, and he dies. Now, Tamar is next in line for Shelah. So Judah says, but Shelah's young. So Judah says, wait, and when Shelah gets older, you can marry him. But Judah's afraid because he doesn't really know why these other two sons died. I mean, he says he's afraid, and so Shelah's here, and the other two sons have died. I don't know if he knows all the details of everything that went on in their family, why they were killed, whatever. So he's a little hesitant about having her marry his third son. You know, so in the course of time, Judah's wife dies. And Tamar starts realizing that as time goes by, that this isn't going to work out with Shelah. Judah's not going to have Shelah marry her. So he's kind of out of the picture. Now, Tamar is in mourning, but she's really upset because she's supposed to be having a kid, a son, or hopefully a son, and then, you know, but then he's not going to let her marry the brother and all that. So she hears that Judah is going, after he's mourned his loss of his wife, now he's going to go down where they're shearing the sheep. So she hears about that, and she puts on a disguise. And then she goes down on the corner of the intersection of wherever and wherever, and she sits there and waits for him to come by. He assumes she's a prostitute. And so he sees her and asks her, and he turned to her at the roadside, "Come, let me come into you." For he did not know that she was his daughter-in-law. She said, "What will you give me that you may come into me?" And he answered, "I will send you a young goat from the flock." And she said, "If you give me a pledge until I send it." So he's going to give her a young goat, right? And then he said, "What pledge shall I give you?" She replied, "Your signet ring, your cord, and the staff that's in your hand. Give me those things as a pledge, and then I'll trust that you'll give me the thing." So he gave them to her, went into her, and she conceived by him. Then she arose and went away, taking off her veil. She put on the garments of her widowhood. So she goes back and goes back to living, but now she's pregnant. Well, a little while later, the sheep shearing's over. They get back home, and Judah sends a couple of his guys down there with the goat and says, "Hey," and he's looking for her, and nobody can find her. And they ask around, and they go, "Well, wait, where'd she go? There's a prostitute that hangs out here, and we're supposed to pay her, and here's this goat." And they go, "There's no prostitute. I don't know who you're talking about. There's no prostitute that hangs out around here, and we don't know anything about it." Goes back home, and he couldn't, okay, so they don't know what's going on. So about 3 months later, going back to the text, 3 months later, somebody told Judah, "Tamar, your daughter-in-law, has been immoral. Moreover, she is pregnant by immorality." And Judah said, "Bring her out and let her be burned." So, "Hey, come here." Okay, so Judah's like, "She's pregnant, burn her." And then he's like, "Well, who's the father?" And she says, "By the man who owns these things, I am pregnant." What are the things? Oh, this signet ring, this cord, and this staff. Any idea who these might belong to? Judah, a little embarrassed. And he says, "She is more righteous than I, since I did not give her to my son Shelah," and he did not know her again. So she ends up giving birth to twins. One is named Perez, and he's my Spanish friends used to say that he was Spanish because his name was Perez, you know. But he's in the line of Jesus. If you go to Matthew 3, he's in that line. And one of the things this kind of brings up is that God uses all kinds of crazy things, because even through this whole process, this was, God overrides it, and God's bigger than it. And so then we get back to go back to where Joseph was. And just I want to do that because, like, that gives you a flavor for where his family is and where they come from. And then she said, so she went in to him to the house. That's back to where we were. And none of the men of the house was there. And she caught him and said, "Lie with me." But he left his garment in her hand, and he fled out of the house. So he's like, you know, "Let me out of here." And he takes off. And she's got his coat, or his garment, whatever that is, probably some kind of a robe. And as soon as she saw that he had left his garment in her hand and had fled out of the house, she called to the men of her household and said to them, "See how he has brought among us a Hebrew to laugh at us? He came in to me to lie with me, and I cried out with a loud voice. And as soon as he heard that I lifted up my voice and cried out, he left his garment beside me and fled and got out of the house." Then she laid up his garment by her until his master came home. And she told him the same story, saying, "The Hebrew servant whom you have brought among us came in to laugh at me. But as soon as I lifted up my voice and cried, he left his garment beside me and fled out of the house." And as soon as the master heard the words that the wife had spoken to him, "This is the way your servant treated me," his anger was kindled. And Joseph's master took him and put him into prison, the place where the king's prisoners were confined, and he was there in prison. So Joseph went from last time, he's the favorite of the dad, has the special coat, has these dreams about how everybody's going to be bowing down to him. And so they, like, get him, throw him in a pit, sell him. He becomes a slave. As he becomes a slave, everything's prosperous. Everything's moving ahead. Look, I'm just going to do what God puts right here in front of me, and I'm going to just do it. And I'm going to be faithful, and I'm going to work at that. And then he gets accused of this assault falsely. And the husband says, no, and takes him in his anger, and then he throws him in jail. But the Lord was with Joseph and showed him steadfast love and gave him favor in the sight of the keeper of the prison. And the keeper of the prison put Joseph in charge of all that the prisoners, of all the prisoners who were in the prison. Whatever was done there, he was the one who did it. So Joseph, again, he's like, okay, another completely unjust situation, unfair, not, you know, I was thinking, like, when he got to prison, I kind of, you'll be able to tell, like, did look at a thesaurus, but he didn't whine, pout, get depressed, didn't complain it was unfair, didn't protest, grumble, whine, carp, criticize, find fault, bellyache, moan, snivel, gripe. He just did what's in front of him. And you know what happened then? God blessed him. And again, he becomes well, what's going on here in the prison? The prison guy is like, oh, Joseph is here. Some people have speculated, doesn't really say it in the text, but some people have speculated that the husband was angry, and it doesn't really say who he was angry with. That the whole, because they said, though, typically what you would do in a case like this is you would put the servant to death. And since he put him in the jail, and then since the keeper recognized him, and pretty soon he's running the jail, that maybe the husband didn't really believe the wife 100%. I don't know. That's a speculation. But it does seem like it fits okay. So here's where we are right now. Let's see what we can learn from Joseph. Number one, find an opportunity. Like you say, so often we find ourselves in a situation that just seems horribly unfair. It just doesn't seem right. Joseph could have walked around moaning and groaning, why am I a slave? This isn't right. All I did was just do what my dad asked and go try to check on my brothers. And here I am, and now I'm a slave. But instead, he just like, okay, what do I do next? Let's take the next step. When he gets to jail, well, okay, here's a place. What did I do to serve? And part of life, part of the blessing on Joseph and part of the blessing in Joseph and part of God's blessing on him is that, look, whatever he does, he's just going to do it. And he's going to do it with all his might, and he's going to do it to the best of his ability, and he's going to, and God just blesses that. God just used that. The second thing is, there's this whole avoid/flee temptation. You know, in 2 Timothy chapter 2, I believe it's verse 22, says flee youthful lust. You know, part of the thing is like this, the woman is like after him, after him, after him, after him. Finally, literally grabs him, and he like takes off. He's like, look, God gave me this. I'm not going to sin against God. I'm not going to sin against the master. I'm not going to sin against you. I'm not going to do this. And she just won't lay off, and she finally gets him. Well, he did the right thing. First, he's kind of avoiding her. And then second, when it really comes down to it, he takes off. He flees. Now, she's left with the evidence, his jacket. Which is evidence of what? It's evidence that she has his jacket. And but I do think there's a lesson there. It's like, oh, look, sometimes for everybody that can handle adversity, like Joseph, sold, slave, put into a bad situation, that's can really make you bitter, and it can be really hard. But being raised up and becoming the leader of the whole house and having everything under your control and you're in charge of the whole thing, minus the wife can totally go to your head. And there's a two-sided temptation here for Joseph. One is the temptation when he's down, and the other is the temptation when he's up. And he stayed a person of integrity when he was down. Well, okay, I'm here. What am I going to do? When he's up, no, I'm not taking advantage of my position. Well, here's this wife. Okay. And like I say, from the examples of Tamar, Reuben, his dad, we didn't necessarily come from a culture of everybody's remains chaste at all times under all circumstances. He's like, no, God's hand is on my life. I'm going to live this the way God wants. And as the little thing about 1 Samuel, you know, when you start going up is when you have the chance to fall the hardest. And when you start rising and things are looking good, all of a sudden it's easy to get lazy and laid back. When we did the one on Judges the other day, Judges, it was the same thing. Every time they go start raising up, then they get a little fat and sassy, forget about God, and then boom, they get judged again. And Joseph is one interesting person because in the Old Testament, you have only a handful, a couple guys that there's really nothing bad. Some people say, well, Joseph was a little like, well, you're all, I had this dream and you're going to have the sheaves and all the sheaves, your sheaves bow down to mine and your stars bow down to mine. I mean, you could see that as a little bit of not the greatest discretion about how his brothers are going to feel about it, but he is a kid. But what he said was also true, and those were the dreams, and nobody had to get angry. They could have gone, wow, what's God trying to say? So what Joseph actually did, there's nothing you can really say, look, Joseph did this bad thing, and Joseph deserves this punishment, and Joseph, everything he did was like, okay, just sharing with them what God had shown him. Maybe it wasn't the right time, but it still was what God had shown him. And then this, he's in the house, and what ends up causing him a problem is not his lack of discretion, but his integrity. Avoid, flee temptation. I mean, sometimes I think some part of the thing is, well, you know what? I'm tempted, so what I'm going to do is I'm just going to resist temptation. It doesn't, there's places, but really most of temptation, you're better off just getting away from it. Well, I really want that. Please. Oh, but I don't want to get it away from me. I'm just going to sit here and play with it and touch it and look at it and long for it. And then I wonder, but you know, then I just fell. Like, how could that be? Well, you know, a lot of life is about positioning. Like, where am I going to position myself? If I'm putting myself in a position to do things that I shouldn't be doing, and I have power where I can set it up, and there's all kinds of ways this creates problem. And leaving temptation behind or getting myself away from it is like distance is a helper sometimes. It's just hard to do this if you're not there. And sometimes it's easy. It's hard to not do it if you are there. If you have all your friends and you've always had a habit, you always do this, and it's always caused you problems. Hey, you know what? Get new friends. Don't go there. Well, you know, when I was at, I remember at The Rock, a lot of times I'd have people talk to me, couples who are getting married. Well, you know, well, what happened? Well, I was over at my girl, they feeling really bad about immorality they'd entered into, right? Well, what happened? Well, I was over at my girlfriend's house. Well, like when? It was like midnight. Well, what happened? Well, she went in, slipped into something more comfortable, and then we fell. Like, dude, just leave, okay? There's a time to not stay there. And part of temptation and dealing with it is just leave it. And that was the thing Joseph did. I mean, so. And then the last thing is, I mean, I guess we could put this on every single one, is trust God. Because through the whole process, and I think this is where sometimes it gets very difficult, is in the process of doing the right thing, and then you get slammed. like, hey, I'm obeying Dad. Dad told me, you know, to go up and check on the brothers. Oh, well, what is that? That's a walk from here to Temecula? Yeah, Dad, I'll go. You know, it's like several days walk. And he gets up there, and then the brothers grab him and throw him in a pit and sell him. Like, hey, I was just doing what Dad asked. Then he goes down here and he starts working. Okay, well, I'm a slave, but I'm going to be the best slave I can be. So he starts working hard, goes up. Pretty soon he's in charge of everything. And then he gets this accusation. Now he's in prison. Well, what am I going to do in prison? I don't know. I mean, I'm here. Let's just be the best prisoner I can be. And so he starts, pretty soon he's in charge of the prison. But listen, he doesn't know, if you haven't read this story, go ahead and read it. I'm not going to give a spoiler here yet. But let's just put it this way. At this point in the story with Joseph in prison, he doesn't know where this is going. When he goes up and tells his brothers to check on his brothers for his dad, and they throw him in a pit and sell him as a slave, he doesn't know where this is going. And they're all talking about killing him. Like, whoa. And then he gets here and he's okay. Well, I guess God had me here as a slave, and I'm just now I'm in charge of this rich guy's house, and that's great. Well, then he gets slammed here again. And through this whole process, and especially as you get to the end of the story, you look back and see God's hand is in the whole thing. And you might be in a place right today where you feel like, man, I'm doing the right thing. I've been nobody's perfect. Nobody's perfect. We all recognize that. On the other hand, there's points where you think, man, I'm at least trying to do the right thing, and I'm trying to avoid temptation, and I'm cutting certain things out of my life, and I'm doing this. And you know what? Everything just fell apart right in front of my face. What happened? You know what? God's bigger than you. God knows more what you need than you know. He knows what's coming tomorrow. And you don't. He knows what's coming the day after that, and you don't. He knows the plan. He knows the story from beginning to end and where your part in the story fits. And you know what? Today, I don't know where we are. I don't know where we are tomorrow. But I know that, I remember when we were going to move to San Diego. We were living in Spain. I just felt like the Lord was telling us there were some reasons why it was time to leave. And to leave our mission. I had changed. The mission was having some issues. I had changed. My oldest son was time to go to college. There were just a lot of things indicating to me that the Lord wanted us to move from there and come back here. And so we chose to come to San Diego. And part of it was I wanted to do bilingual ministry. And that was my first job. But when we came here in May of 1997... I didn't have a job. I didn't have a job lined up. And as soon as I told the supporters from my mission, because we were only getting support on a faith mission basis where people supported us on a monthly basis. And then I said, well, I could have said, well, we're just figuring out what we're going to do. And I think everybody would have. But I said, look, we're not going to be staying with our mission. Immediately lost all of our support. Ooh. Maybe that wasn't the best thing to say right then. You know, I'm not sure. But that's what we did. And so then, because that was the truth. It seemed to me like, I mean, you could play games with people and say, well, you know, we're not sure what we're going to do. We're praying about it. We'd already prayed about it. We already knew what we were doing. This is what we're doing. And you know what? God's big enough right then that he can take care of us then, or he can take care of us later. Now, if we really didn't know, that's another story. But we really knew. Oh, we're going to be dropping out of our mission. And then, boom, the next day, basically that was the end of the support. So then we had this place. We had a house to live in over here. But one of my former mission director goes, when I told him I was moving to San Diego, he's like, well, how are you going to move to San Diego? You don't have that much support, and San Diego's expensive, and what are you going to do, and what about this? And blah, 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 you know, a lot of questions. And I'm like, listen, his name was Dave. I go, Dave, I don't really know what the future holds, but I do know who holds the future. And I believe God's calling us to San Diego, and I know it's expensive. I know that there's, you know, but that's where I think God's calling us. I think God's calling us to leave the mission. I think God's calling us to go to San Diego. I think that's what we're going to do. And we got here, and I'm like, once you get here, it's like, well, now what? Well, you know, because I left my mission, I didn't have any kind of network of support or anything. I didn't have I had a couple friends, but very few friends here in San Diego, and I wasn't really sure what to do. And we were interested in helping international students, and they were having a conference at Horizon called China 97, surprisingly enough. It was with Chinese students, and it was 1997, so I think that had something to do with how they got the name of it. And so one of our friends knew somebody that did some international ministry at ministry with international students at College Avenue Baptist. And so I called him, and he said, well, we have Chinese students from all over the country who are coming into town, and they need a place to stay, and they need a ride up to Horizon during 4 days of the four or five days, whatever the conference was. And so so we said, yeah, we'll take two. We have room at our house. We could fit two in. So we had two Chinese girls stayed with us, and then I gave them a ride up to the conference every day. And then I didn't have a job, so I would sit in the conference. And probably getting a little too much in the weeds here, but have you ever been to a conference that's in another language? And then I had like the little headset where somebody was translating, and they're speaking Chinese. The whole conference is in Chinese. And then I had like a headset where somebody was doing simultaneous translation, but I don't think they could get a job at the UN. And it was hard to follow what the person was saying. And then he would say something, and everybody in the whole room starts laughing. And I'm like, you know what? Not only do I not think that they've said anything funny, I don't see what they said that could possibly have been funny. And, it was definitely lost in translation. But that was kind of an interesting thing to me. So then I was there, and I was up there at the Mount Elephant campus where they had this event, and I'm like, they have a high school here. I kind of need a job. I used to be a high school teacher. I wonder if they would be hiring anyone. So I went by the office, picked up an application, went and said, hey guys, you need a teacher? And, you know, it's like August by this point, or end of July, 1st of August. And they're going, what do you teach? I go, well, I used to teach. I have a degree in biochemistry. I used to teach math. I used to teach science. I also have a master's degree in Bible. I can teach Bible. I've also been living in Spain for 10 years, and I think I could teach Spanish. And so they go, oh, we need a Spanish teacher. Okay, I'm your guy. And so why do you want this job? Well, I've got 4 kids and rent and stuff, and so plus I love Spanish and I love teaching, right? So, but I do think the 4 kids and the rent were really actually pretty high on my priority list. And so, you know what, went there, taught there, and I preached in a lot of Hispanic churches around for the first few years we were here, and then eventually God led through a whole bunch of stuff, and then in 2004 we started the chapel. And God is so good. And there's so many times in that where you don't know what the next step is. Not only do you not know what the next step is, this step seems so bad that how could you possibly have another good step? It's like they listen to the Chinese, and I don't get why anybody could possibly be laughing about what was just said. And everybody is, because they know something you don't. And we're panicked and flipping out, and God's not. Why? Because He knows something you don't know. He knows what's coming next. God's not caught by surprise. God doesn't like, oh, I'm shocked that happened. God, we are, but God knows it. And then part of life is just taking the next step. And then, you know what? Man, I feel like I stepped off this thing and landed on my face. You might have. But you know what? I don't know why God has you in the hospital to meet somebody. I don't know why God has you here to do something. And so often, the thing that you think is the worst thing that ever happened to you, all of a sudden turns into the best thing that ever happened to you. And the only way you know that is you take the next step and you trust God. And we're always in that position. And when go back to point two, the temptation, when everything's riding high, the temptation is to think, man, look how good I am. Look how I've got everything riding high. And then, you know what, when we then all of a sudden we smack the ground. And the reality is, God could raise us up, God could set us down, God's in control. He's in charge. When the Israelites think, oh, we're just going to take the Ark of the Covenant out, and then naturally we'll win this battle. No, no, your pride's not going to win this thing. And then the Ark, God defeats them through the Ark, right? Because they're proud too. But God can just do it over and over. When you go, the next readings are Samuel, Kings, and over you're going to see they raise up, they get proud, God smacks them down. Other countries come in, God uses them, but then they get proud, God smacks them down. God hates pride. Humility is, Lord, what's the next step? Lord, I don't know why you did this, but Lord, I'm going to take the next step and I'm going to trust you. I know you've got something going here. And whatever it is, I want to be part of it. Trust God and learn from Joseph. Let's pray. Father, we just thank you and praise you for your goodness, for your love, for your mercy. We pray, Father, that in the midst of our lives of ups and downs and